1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Steve Kaifin. On a day of servants, a service and remembrance, people are paying tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., this girl in San Antonio.
If he didn't give the speeches, we wouldn't be here right now. And we wouldn't, support everybody, Black Lives Matter and stuff. I think all the speeches that he told changed the world.
Dr. King's son in Washington.
Have we achieved the dream? And the reality is absolutely not. We have made progress and strides.
And President Biden.
Will we choose democracy over autocracy or community over chaos, love over hate? These are the questions of our time that I ran for president to try to help answer, and that Dr. King's life and legacy, in my view, show us the way forward.
Republicans want to know who had access to two locations where documents marked classified were found. One was President Biden's home. White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
With classified papers kept at Joe Biden's home, House Republicans have demanded logs of visitors to the president's Wilmington residence. But the White House says no such records exist. And whether it was Donald Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago, or George W. Bush's ranch in Texas, or any other private home of a president, no visitor logs are ever kept.
Now to California, where more rain has again raised flooding fears. WCBS meteorologist Craig Allen.
Torrential rain has moved in from the Pacific and is now in the Bay Area, across San Francisco, over to Stockton, Modesto, California. And some of this heavy rain, once it starts to rise above the 5,000-foot level, changes to heavy snow.
In Goshen, California, in the central part of the state, a horrific crime. Six people found shot to death in and around a home, including a baby and teenage mother. Sheriff Mike Boudreau is leading the investigation.
We believe that this was a targeted family. We believe that there are gang associations involved in this scene, as well as potential narcotics investigations.
He says it's believed two suspects are responsible for the deaths. Overseas, at least 40 people were killed. Others are still missing after a Russian missile strike destroyed an apartment building in the city of Dnipro in Ukraine. CBS's Deborah Pato.
As each hour passes, the hope for finding survivors gets dimmer. But for the Russian Defense Ministry, it was mission accomplished, saying their goals had been achieved with the strike.
The UN estimates 7,000 civilians have died in Ukraine in 11 months of war. Tampa Bay hosts Dallas tonight in the final NFL wildcard playoff game. Wall Street quiet today because of the holiday. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Paid for by government.com.
The 1921 to 1935 Silver Peace Dollar, a true American classic and one of the most iconic silver dollar coins in history. It has been over 85 years since these silver dollars were minted for circulation. But now, for a limited time only, full pound bags of original U.S. government struck silver dollars are being released to the public. That's right. You can own a full pound of 1921 to 1935 original silver dollar coins, all in very good collector condition with fully visible dates and mint marks, guaranteed. Call 1-800-473-1745 now to secure collector-grade U.S. silver dollars by the pound, minted during the Roaring Twenties and the Great Depression. Plus, receive a bonus American Collector's Pack valued at over $25 free with every order. Call 1-800-473-1745 now to secure your full pound of United States silver dollars before they are gone. That's 1-800-473-1745. 1-800-473-1745.
The moment you walk into Family Natural Foods, you know you'll have a great experience with excellent customer service. Their knowledgeable staff are welcoming and friendly, happy to help you with any questions or needs you bring in. Have you tried their oils and vinegars yet? You can taste test them before you buy. Some favorites among the gourmet balsamic vinegars include cranberry, date, and apple. Think beyond the salad bowl. These are great on everything from veggies to grilled meats. Family Natural Foods, 910 West Grand Avenue. For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Tuesday, January 17th.
The Wood County Board of Supervisors will meet at 9:30 a.m. at the Courthouse Boardroom, Branch 3, in Wisconsin Rapids. The Wisconsin Rapids Common Council public meeting will take place at 6 p.m. in the Council Chambers at City Hall. In Portage County, the Highway Committee will meet at 3:30 p.m. at the Portage County Annex Conference Rooms 1 and 2. The Portage County Board meeting will take place at 5 p.m. at the Portage County Courthouse, County Board Chambers. In Adams County, the Finance Committee will meet from 5 to 6 p.m. and the City Council will meet from 6 to 7 p.m. The Committee of the Whole will meet from 5:30 to 6 p.m. at the Adams County Courthouse, followed by the County Board of Supervisors from 6 to 8 p.m. And that's the news update on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Overcast skies this afternoon with scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 37. Southeasterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Scattered rain showers again tonight, 32. Overcast. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow, 37. 2 to 4 inches of snow Wednesday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 35.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Big Boss Man.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Thank you for tuning in wherever you're listening on the Civic Media Network. Thank you for joining for the 1 o'clock hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. Coming up for the whole hour is David Haynes, who after a journalism career spanning more than four decades, a third of which was at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, has retired. How's that feeling?
I am in no danger of going back to full-time work anytime soon.
He was also my boss. I am still working at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is not. But for the first 15 months of my tenure there, we every week, you would be in charge of the teleprompter. Well, first you'd be in charge of fact-checking and making sure what I was going to say, while opinionated, was accurate.
Correct. Although I think the teleprompter was by far my greatest contribution to the effort.
Absolutely.
And even that, I was not that good at, I have to say.
You were fine. You got better. You certainly got better. But now, instead of just being my boss, he is my friend. And I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
I'm happy to be here. It's awesome. I had a circuitous route getting here. I took the bus all the way from my home in Whitefish Bay.
And that was a trek.
It was. It was kind of interesting. I would not want to be someone trying to work in Waukesha County and living on the east side of Milwaukee and every day and have to do that, but it was fine.
2 hours, you said?
Roughly. Well, 2.5 because I stopped to get a coffee at Colectivo on the way.
Okay.
Sustenance.
But this is the kind of time that you now have that you can enjoy.
I got nothing but time, Chris.
Do you have anything for the suggestion box of for the transit system?
Well, being on time would be good. The second okay. bus was a few minutes late. And as some of you might know, if you've looked outside, it's raining today. So, but it was fine.
Well, we're happy to have you. Thank you for coming in
Thank
person.
You.
And so you've only ever done journalism.
That's right.
So 19 was your first job?
Yeah, I was 19 years old. I knew even before that I wanted to write. And I went to a creative writing seminar my senior year of high school. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to write a novel or something. And I realized that's really hard. And it doesn't probably pay you much money. So I studied journalism in college. First at a two-year commuter campus near my home in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and got a call one day from the editor of the paper in my hometown of Auburn, Indiana, a town of about 8,000 in northeast Indiana. And it turns out, I didn't know this at the time, but my high school baseball coach knew I was interested in writing and thought, well, maybe he could write about our team. I think hoping he'd get good coverage, but it was a great opportunity for me, and I had a chance to learn how to do it from the ground up.
So, you started in college. What were your jobs before you made it to Wisconsin?
So, I went to work immediately after college in Fort Wayne at a paper that's now out of business, and we'll talk more about what's happened to the newspaper business later on, but had a paper in Fort Wayne, an evening newspaper. They used to have evening and morning papers. What a concept. Called the New Sentinel, and I worked there 9 years as a reporter and editor and did all kinds of things. And then I went on, my wife's job took us out to Massachusetts. She was working in Worcester in central Mass, about 50 miles west of Boston, and I found a job in Lowell. And Lowell was this awesome town of about 100,000, about 25,000 of the people living there had recently come to the city from Southeast Asia for a variety of reasons. Oh, wow. They had a huge influx of migrants, but it was a town of immigrants. When I first, and I'm coming from Indiana, which is kind of insular, a little bit homogenous. So I walk out my first day to get lunch in Lowell, and I started counting the languages being spoken, and I got to 6.
Wow.
I don't know Greek, but I heard Greek. I heard French. I heard Spanish. I heard English. I can't remember the others, but it was like shocking. It's this international city that is a city of immigrants. And so super interesting to work there. The newspaper is family owned. They really cared about the community. And I learned a great deal. But we wanted to get back to the Midwest. And so 1994, both of us landed jobs at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It wasn't the Journal Sentinel then, though.
Was it the Journal or the Sentinel?
Yeah, I came to the Sentinel.
Okay.
And my wife worked for what was it called? Journal Communications.
Okay.
Which handled the business operations for both newspapers. So she was a circulation manager, one of the top managers in our circulation department. So making sure the paper went thunk at the doorstep every morning. And I was hired to start a new business publication called Monday Business for the Sentinel. It was a what we call a tab, so a magazine size. My boss was George Stanley in 1984. And when I left, my boss was George Stanley.
Well, you two are similar in age. So that weird at that point of like your boss? Because at that point, you would have been in early 30s?
Yeah, that's probably, what was I? Yeah, 30-something, late 30s.
Okay. Yeah. So you did that, but then at one point you were the education editor, the enterprise editor, the business editor, the opinion editor, and then your final, as my boss, was the ideas lab editor, which was a transition, still opinion, but kind of a transition into more solution journalism. You also were the community engagement coordinator. And so what, because I at your retirement party the other night, one of your colleagues and friends poked a little fun at you that when you made the switch over to opinion, that you aren't always great of infusing it with enough opinion. So what was that transition like especially I think what you said before is that you loved writing, but journalism is as much writing as it is getting the information. And so what have you found as the balance of all the different things that you've done, the writing versus editing, the reporting versus opinion? Like, what different things did it feed you? And like, what advice do you give for people who, in this broad world of journalism, where to find the nuggets that feed what you're best at or what you enjoy the most?
So I'll talk about the opinion thing first. And it's really true. And that was my friend Ernie Franzen, who retired, took a buyout in 2017 and left me all alone on the opinion board for a period of time. You know, it's really weird to have an opinion board of one person. I mean, you have a conversation with yourself. I mean, how do you do that? We figured it out. But when I first went to the opinion board, I'd been a journalist at that time for 25, going on 30 years. And so I'd never done opinion. And literally the first piece I turned in, Ricardo Pimentel, my mentor, friend, and boss, said, you can put some opinion in here, you know? And so I figured it out. So you talked about, I did have a lot of opportunities to try different things. And I always found that after about 5 years on a job, I was sort of eager to try something else. And the thing about the Journal Sentinel that I always admired, and George is largely responsible for this, along with my former great friend and boss, Marty Kaiser, who retired, I think, around 2016, they created a culture of learning in that newsroom, a culture of collaboration, a culture where people respected one another and learned from one another. And so whenever I made the transition from writing to editing, or back to writing again, or in the case of working on the opinion board, doing both, I learned a lot. You learn a lot from being an editor about writing. You learn a lot about writing from being an editor. And so those experiences, I just thought were great. But I think the best job I had was the last one I had, where I could do writing and editing and do community engagement and get out of the office.
And so with the community engagement, because obviously the last couple of years, as we've talked about, have been hard. But what did it look like when you first took that on? And also, where do you think what do you think the importance is? And I know we're going to come back to local journalism and newspapers in the third segment of this hour, but because I think that's something that I find really interesting is, like, now that I'm back and I feel like the pivot back towards how do you talk to the people who you're also reporting for and you're trying to give them information that they need, but it's also, it can't be a one-way street. Like, you have to be getting stuff from them. And so, like, the community engagement part is so important. And so how did you approach it when you were in charge of it?
At first, I saw it as a way for us to take our journalism to the public. And so we collaborated with UWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, and did a series of conversations called Across the Divide. At the end of 2016, after that just rancorous, awful election, awful for a number of reasons, as we know, I just was really concerned about the fact that people didn't seem to be able to talk to one another. And so we talked to public radio and said, could we do a series of events that would be focused on bringing people who have different opinions together and having a conversation? So the first one we did was at Maxie's upstairs, there in 68th and Wells. And we had a super conservative lawyer, Rick Essenberg from Will, and a liberal writer, Janet Eisen, who had written a lot for us. And we talked about how to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And then we did subsequent shows on school choice, on immigration. We did another one on education that's slipping my mind. But the idea was, could we have a conversation? Could we bring our journalism with our journalists out to the community? And increasingly, before the pandemic, it became more about, can we get out and talk to audiences that we're not reaching now? So we did a lot of work through a project we called Listen MKE, which eventually took on the library as a partner and Milwaukee PBS as a partner. Did a lot of work in predominantly Black neighborhoods in Milwaukee, just listening, because it was clear to us that we didn't understand what people living in those communities really wanted or needed.
We have to take our first break. I have some more follow-up questions, but where I want to go next is, because we're losing both you and George, who George Stanley is also retired. So there's a lot of institutional knowledge that we are losing. And especially for someone like me who is still learning what I missed while I wasn't living here. So when we come back, I'd like to have a little bit more of a conversation of how Wisconsin has changed since you've moved here.
Sure.
This is As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest is David Haynes. Stick right here.
Give me a boss man, the one that's going to treat me right. Work hard in the evening. Rest easy at night. Big boss man, big boss man, big boss man. Can't you hear me when I call? I said you ain't so big.
Remember when you could turn on the radio and hear a song you'd never heard before? A song that would make you tap your feet, snap your fingers, maybe get up and dance a little? A song that once you heard it made you say, that's a surefire hit. Those days are gone. Or are they? Tune in on Sunday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. and catch Seth Faces the Music on WFHR. The premise is simple. Every week I pick a theme and find songs that fit the theme. It's so simple yet so, so good. Join me, won't you, for Seth Faces the Music every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio WFHR.
Parents, we know we can't protect our kids from everything. Eventually they're going to bump their heads or scrape their knees. But we can protect them from six types of cancer. HPV, or human papillomavirus, is a common, preventable virus that can cause cancer later in life. The HPV vaccine prevents human papillomavirus and all the cancers it can cause. The American Cancer Society recommends getting your sons and daughters the HPV vaccine starting at age 9 to protect them later in life.
It was a normal day.
It was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car, he came home, and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org. Brought to you by Brady and the Ad Council.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news talk and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Talk radio, streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
So what did I miss? What did I miss? Virginia, my home, sweet home, I want to give you a kiss.
She's... Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this hour is David Haynes, who is the recently retired, my old boss, Ideas Lab editor over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he wore many different hats over the decades. How many years? So if it was a third of your career, how many years in total were you?
Almost 29.
Almost 29. Wow. Yeah. How long he was at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And one of the things I've now come back and been back for about 2 years, and to obviously talk a lot about politics and have opinions about politics, which was some of the things that we worked on together and my videos over there. But there's so much stuff that I wasn't here for. I left in 2003, so there's this 17-year gap of what was happening in the political sphere, what was happening to the state. And so I left about 9 years after you moved here.
So Tommy Thompson was still governor when you left, or just left?
Had just left.
So Jim Doyle was, or yeah. McCallum or Jim Doyle.
McCallum, I think, and then Jim Doyle, because...
You missed a lot.
I missed a lot. And so as you're now, you know, one of my favorite things of sitting at my desk that was across from your desk at Journal Sentinel is there would be times where you and I would be talking, but then every once in a while, like George would walk by or Carrie would walk by or some of the other... like journalists and reporters or editors who've been there for so long. And just the stories you guys have of Tommy Thompson or Walker and as journalists. And so this is a shorter segment, but as far as like what in the 30 years you've been here, how would you describe what changed and what were some of the pivotal changing points of what Wisconsin was like in the 90s versus what it's like now?
Politically.
Sure.
Yeah. So, well, the biggest change was the election of 2010. And leading up to that election, Democrats had control of the governor's office. Jim Doyle was governor. He was retiring. So it was an open seat. Tom Baird and Scott Walker were running for governor. But the Democrats controlled both houses of the legislature, and the state Supreme Court was controlled by the liberal wing of the court. After the 2010 election, the Republicans controlled the governor's chair and both houses of the legislature, and that was a redistricting year. And so new Governor Walker decided, and the Republican leadership decided, that they were going to play hardball. They didn't do anything corrupt, illegal, but they played hardball. So they gerrymandered the state. In 2011, they pushed through Act 10, which I'm sure you've talked about on your show, which basically gutted the public employee labor unions. And that was all under the guise of closing a budget deficit, which, if memory serves, was $170 million or something. It wasn't huge. But what it was really about was disempowering the Democratic Party in the state, because the foot soldiers for the Democratic Party were those big unions, mm-hmm. the Service Workers Union in Madison and the Wisconsin Teachers Union. And that fundamentally changed, along with gerrymandering, fundamentally changed our politics. And but Republicans in power now going on, was it 13 years?
So was it nicer before? Like, were there, was, I mean, because I would imagine that there was always, I mean, two-party politics is always going to have people.
You're always going to have competition. And, you know, going back prior to 2010, there was the biggest scandal I can remember was the caucus scandal, where people who worked for the two caucuses, the Republican and Democratic caucus, were working, getting paid by the government to do political work. And Dee Hall from then the Wisconsin State Journal and a couple of our reporters exposed that. Chuck Kawala, who was a major leader, Democratic leader in the Senate, played a lot of hardball with Tommy Thompson. So I wouldn't say it was nicer, but it got even more bare knuckle after 2010. And I think it was largely because the Republicans, by through the actions they took, again, not illegal, you know, they won. And what I've always said to Democrats who complain is, you shouldn't have lost the 2010 election. But what they did was, by basically stripping the power of the Democratic Party, left the Democratic Party in a rough shape. And it's never quite recovered in the state.
And one of the questions, Jane, I know that you wanted to ask David, it was about open records laws and kind of where we are now, which maybe maybe this was the case even before this sea change, but how much of that, your question that we've already talked about, kind of plays into all of this? And so I'll let Jane.
David, you remember the 4th of July weekend when the Republican legislature tried to gut the open records law, and then there was all this outrage because somebody got wind of it and printed it, and all of a sudden they all backed off. But what's always bothered me is that no one had to author it and say, this is my name on it, and here's my co-author. It was just like, yeah, some anonymous ghost dropped this by, and we decided to push it along. Why is that a thing? How can that be a thing?
Yeah, it shouldn't be a thing. It was slipped into the Budget Writing Committee, which is called the Joint Finance Committee. It was slipped into the budget bill by somebody on that committee. I'm not sure we know even now who did it. It was one of the Republicans. And I think at that time, the Republicans had outnumbered the Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee by like 3-1. But it shouldn't be a thing. And we argued in an editorial on the front page July 3rd, a Saturday. We called it a declaration of secrecy. But, you know, so we take some credit for the fact that they backed off. But I have to say that conservatives and liberals alike were appalled by what they did. And even I mentioned Rick Essenberg previously, very conservative lawyer, runs the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Will, pretty controversial law firm. But he was outraged by it. And because of that sort of bipartisan outrage, they backed off. But to answer your question, and it shouldn't be a thing. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. We should know what our elected representatives are doing and who's doing it.
Exactly. All right, which is why that's a good segue, because when we come back, we're going to talk about the importance of local journalism, how it's changed over the years, and where we need to take it to preserve it. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest is David Haynes. Stay tuned.
I've been fighting for the South alone.
The Shaw.
Locally Grown Radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Hey Badger fans, it's Matza Matt for Brewpub, lots of Matza Pizza. Basketball season is here, and there's nothing that beats sitting and listening to a Badger game while enjoying a delicious Brewpub pizza. Every game-winning shot and every sweet alley-oop deserves a pizza that's just as amazing. And you'll find that in a Brewpub Lots of Matza Pizza. Loaded with high-quality meat and veggie toppings, then bombarded with over half a pound of award-winning Wisconsin mozzarella cheese, Brewpub pizzas are a swish of delish. Snag one today from your local grocery store or during home games in the concession stand at the Kohl Center.
Light the lamp.
All the way down, he scores! A 200-foot empty net goal for the captain.
And defend the ice.
Driving in, centering pass. Oh, great sliding left pad save.
This is America's college hockey capital.
Fire one towards the net and scores.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
One day it's bone-chilling cold. The next, the sun is shining. Hey, it's Wisconsin. Don't like the weather? Wait 10 minutes. It'll change. Sooner or later, the snow will go away. But right now, it's freezing cold. And all that cold weather can cause freeze-ups in your holding tank or septic pipe system. So be sure that you keep an eye out for trouble. And call Crockett Septic to help you if you encounter a jam. Call Crockett Septic today at 715-712-3456. Crockett Septic, where the trucks smell like sweet cherry pie.
Crockett Septic serves you near or far. Holding tanks and septics pumped right there in your yard. They got porta potties ready for you too. They'll pump away that stinky nasty poo. Crockett Septic, be there in a jiff. Crockett Septic, no more nasty whiff. Crockett Septic, they won't make you cry. Their bumper trucks smell just like cherry pie.
Don't search through the phone book for hours looking for help. Don't waste time being transferred from department to department looking for answers. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, simply dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Free and confidential information and referral is available throughout Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 and get connected and get answers.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tase at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man? It all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
For Civic Media, I'm Melissa Kay with your local news update. Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebrations are going on all over Wisconsin today. The oldest official state celebration is at the State Capitol Rotunda in Madison. Milwaukee's annual King Day celebration is at the Marcus Performing Arts Center. There are also events from Kenosha to Eau Claire and La Crosse to Wausau. All events are free and open to the public. A vehicle was found partially submerged in a pond on January 15th near 1600 Robin Lane in the township of Linwood. The Portage County Sheriff's Department found one person dead in the vehicle. It seems the vehicle had been in the pond for several days before it was found. They suspect it may have been driven into the water intentionally. They are investigating, but the situation is not considered to be suspicious. In sports, the Bucks host Indiana this afternoon. Tampa Bay hosts Dallas in the NFL playoffs tonight. And that's the news on your locally grown radio station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Overcast skies this afternoon with scattered rain showers likely. High temperatures reach up to 37. Southeasterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Scattered rain showers again tonight, 32. Overcast. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow, 37. 2 to 4 inches of snow Wednesday night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 35.
At 844-967-2789, our guest this hour is David Haynes, the recently retired Ideas Lab opinion editor over at Journal Sentinel after he had many different jobs there over the years. But speaking of the text line, you said we have a text?
We do, from the 920. David, what makes the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel better than the other USA Today papers in Wisconsin that people are pulling away from? My family switched from the Oshkosh Northwestern to an independent paper called the Oshkosh Herald because they do more local reporting.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I don't want to speak to what the other USA Today Network papers are doing in Wisconsin, but I do think that the Journal Sentinel still has, despite some cutbacks in staff, still has a sizable staff that is committed to doing investigative journalism. I've said this before, but I think that, again, despite the cutbacks, we have in that room some of the best young reporters anywhere. A lot of them actually have come from places like the Appleton paper or the Green Bay paper. And so it's always about the amount of staff you have and then how you deploy it. And I haven't worked in those other newsrooms, so I don't know much about them. But I know that in the case of the Journal Sentinel, there's still a lot of talent there and a real commitment to doing the kind of really hard journalism that you have to do to keep people accountable.
And, you know, I think there is, it's interesting because it's so important. Like, I say this a lot. I couldn't do this show and do this show talking about Wisconsin issues without local journalism, right? Doing a 3-hour show, I do not have the bandwidth to be going out and finding 3 hours of original stories that I'm directly reporting on and do the show. So ultimately it ends up becoming like editorializing. And I do the same thing with my videos, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not the person going out there getting all of the source material and the firsthand interviews. I am reading the final product of reporters who are doing all that work and then summarizing it even more or giving opinion on top of it. But like the fact that we're so lucky, I think, still in Milwaukee to have the Journal Sentinel, but in communities around Wisconsin, even that there are for USA Today papers, there are still outlets, but they're understaffed because ultimately so many of our newspapers are getting sucked up into conglomerates what they really care about is their bottom line. And so that kind of transitions into a conversation about the evolutions in your career that you saw with the newspapers.
Yeah, so, you know, I've said this before, but for the first 25 years of my career, nothing much changed. Mm-hmm. You put the newspaper to bed at midnight, and you woke up, and it was on your doorstep in the morning. The last 15 years or so of my career, everything changed to the point that if you've been out of a newsroom for 6 months to a year, there's a lot of things that are different, even in that short period of time. And it's mainly because reading habits have fundamentally changed. Technology has changed how we can read, when we can read, and we want that content sent to us, delivered to us, often over social media. And as a result, the business model of newspapers in particular is just fundamentally broken. Now, there have been... So the business model used to be you sell a subscription to people. That's 20% of your income. 80% of your income was classified and retail advertising. Classified advertising in the Journal in the late 90s, Sunday you might have 80 pages of classified. At $25, $30 for 3 or 4 lines, can you imagine how much money that was?
Yeah.
That supported a huge newsroom. That's all gone. You know, Craigslist and other online marketplaces have taken that away. Retail advertising is far, far less than it used to be. And so that's put great pressure on the business model. It's resulted in big cutbacks. I think the consolidation of newspapers under corporate banners, whether it's Gannett, Gatehouse, Alden, or some other. Look, I think the people at Gannett that I know do really good work. They're very committed to journalism. They're trying very hard to make this work, but I think fundamentally it's hard for a corporate-owned local newspaper. I just think it's hard. It's hard for them to care about 260 markets the way a local owner would care about Milwaukee.
Well, go ahead, Jane.
David, I want to make sure that I'm correct about this, but it's my understanding that having local news outlets, particularly a newspaper in cities, is so important that if you don't have one, it affects your bond rating.
Yeah, there was a study out of the University of Notre Dame 3 or 4 years ago, and I haven't seen it replicated, so it's just one study, but I can see why it would be true. And they found that in communities, and keep in mind, One in four newspapers have gone out of business since 2004 or 5, according to Northwestern's research of a year ago. So there are many communities that don't have fact-based professional journalism going on in the way, at least, that it once did. And in those communities, this study found that those communities were actually spending more on bond issues. And this isn't because these are bad people running your communities, just because no one's calling them on it. No one's paying attention. No one is raising their hand when they go into executive session illegally, which happens all the time, and saying, and saying, no, you can't do that. This has to be an open meeting. That's what journalists do, among many other things. And so there is some evidence for that.
And so what, because I understand from the fundamental side of there, it's a business model, right? You have to be able to have a sustainable business model.
Gotta make money.
Instead of, you know, and so there is certain philanthropy and there are people who want to support local journalism in small amounts, sometimes in very large amounts. I always have a problem with that because I'm like, why is it always up to the very wealthy to decide what gets funded and what's not? But that's a totally different issue for a different day. But what is, if it's not a physical paper, like, is there, because there's obviously at the top, I remember this earlier, midway through last year, during the first kind of announcement of cuts that were going to happen across Gannett properties. And there was an article written that compared New York Times to Gannett. And you and I had this conversation about, it's very fundamentally different products because the New York Times is one product that has a international readership.
That's right.
That is very different than 260 local markets and understanding how do you focus on that market. And so is that the part that's broken, that like the return of independently locally owned newspapers, or is there a way that in a large corporation they could do this right? Like, what do you feel like
in order
to save local journalism?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think they can do it right. The New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, Minneapolis Star Tribune all have different ownership structures, but they're also doing a great job of selling digital subscriptions, New York Times in particular. It's a little bit different, though, for the New York Times. They're an international newspaper. They have a huge market to draw from. It's harder for a paper like the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But if you look at what the Journal Sentinel has done, and I give a ton of credit to George Stanley, Greg Borowski, Rachel Piper, our brilliant digital editor at the Journal Sentinel, their strategy has been to build that that well of revenue through digital subscriptions. And, you know, I don't think I'm talking out of school here, but they've quintupled at least in the last few years, and they're going to keep growing that. I think that you need another bucket. And this is where my successor at the paper, Jim FitzHenry, part of his role.
My new boss.
Your new boss. Jim is awesome. Comes through some Oshkosh. But part of his role is to amp up pretty significantly the philanthropic funding for the mission of the organization. So digital subscriptions, that's selling a product, you know, the news, but we need to fund the mission as well. And you do that by getting foundations and getting grants and, you know, getting high wealth people to contribute. It used to be that we knew how, look, this community, this region has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't changed in the last 20 years. It still has a lot of money. We used to know how to tap that wealth to produce good journalism and a large staff. I'm fully convinced that there's enough wealth in this region for a staff twice the size of what they have down at 330 East Kilburn. But we don't know quite how to tap that at this point. So it's going to be a combination of a lot of different things. Philanthropic giving, which I think has to be significantly amped up, and they know that, they're working on it. Continuing to work this business model of digital subscriptions. And then, you know, there's still a lot of people that want the print paper, and that's probably going to be fewer days a week at some point down the road. But it's not going away anytime soon.
So this is a bit of a pivot, but mostly because I'm interested in getting your opinion on record about this. So there's also this change. I feel like there's so many different places to get information now. Yep. And I'm throw myself in one of those ways, right? Like the way I got the job at Journal Sentinel is I was doing the news based off other people's journalism in an entertaining way. There's people who do it a lot, have much bigger followings, who do this on a national scale and an international scale. And because there's so many different platforms, there's so many different channels, there's so many different ways to, the floodgates are open and the barrier to entry is so much lower than it ever was as far as creating content, spreading information, but also then potentially spreading misinformation, conflating opinion with fact-based journalism. Right. And so where do you feel like that's a good thing? And where do you feel like it's a danger to what good journalism is, which is informing democracy?
Well, I just think we have to have people, professional journalists in every community doing fact-based, evidence-based journalism. And I think it's great that people like you and others are doing this work of spreading news in a thoughtful way, but not everyone is thoughtful. And so, surprise. So, if you go into some of the communities that have either no newspaper or zombie newspapers, which have a nameplate but don't really do much reporting anymore, somebody's filling that gap. Are they filling it with good evidence-based information? Often not. And that leads to disinformation, that leads to more polarization in our politics. It leads to what I think are a lot of bad things. So I want to make a quick point here that I think is relevant. I said this at my retirement party the other night. I really believe it. In fact, I'm thinking about writing an essay on it. I think that in every community, Milwaukee, Waukesha, Green Bay, every community, civic leadership needs to take ownership of this in addition to the journalists, because it's a public good. Journalism is a public good. Evidence-based journalism is a public good. Just like you need roads that are in good repair. You need a water system that works. You need a transit system. We would argue in Milwaukee, we really need an NBA basketball team. Thank God for that. But we also need journalism, because we've seen what happens when you don't have it. And so I think we understand that. So I think civic leadership, and I'm talking about foundations, the chamber, should take some ownership for that as well and be part of a larger conversation about how we support journalism in our communities. And I know some journalists blanch when they hear somebody like me say that, because like, we don't want to get in bed with the people we cover. Well, we don't have to get in bed with them. But we ought to have a larger conversation in every community about how we can sustain it. Because without it, without that public good, I think we're not as thriving a community.
Well, on that note, we're going to go to another break, because I don't think that was such a great note to end on for that topic. But when we come back, a little lighter, we're going to talk about what you're going to do now that you're retired. Sure. Wear your pajamas and play crossword puzzles.
I got a new pair at my retirement party, as you know. And some slippers.
Yeah. Well, we have one more segment. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false. The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested. True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
I'm gonna dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Mama, what does the chicken say?
Chicken. Oh, okay.
And a wolf?
Oh, a wolf.
What about the tiny dog? Cat. Aww. Owl.
Ooh.
Dolphin? What does the turkey say? Whale.
Yeah, whale sound.
Do the giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Okay. Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hello, music lovers. Tim the Polka Guy here to let you know the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show is moving to a new time slot, 12 noon every Saturday. So join me for the best in old-time music every Saturday at 12 noon right here on the new WFHR 97.5 FM and AM 1320.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Big ball spring.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. A reminder that we love hearing from you. So if you have a topic that you think we should cover, or an idea for a guest we should have on, or any feedback for me and Jane, or Jane and I, Jane and me.
Us.
Email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. Our beloved guest for this last hour has been, still is, David Haynes. How do you feel about it? This is your first time on the radio?
It's not my first time on the radio, first time with you.
Yes.
But I have to say, I love the bumper music, Jane. I mean, this is, I felt like doing karaoke here.
Jane's very good at, we do have a Spotify playlist where you can find all of Jane's music. She's very good at finding Easter eggs. So we have different analysts and researchers from Wisconsin Policy Forum come on fairly regularly. And she found a parody song called, what is it called?
It's called Get Data.
Get Data.
So, remember the song Get Lucky?
Yeah.
This is Get Data by the Neurotransmissions.
Yeah. And so,
one of my favorite things in the world.
The parody songs, the little Easter eggs, because she knows what the topic is. And so she's pretty good at finding something that's topical and relevant for what the segment's going to be about. So we've talked a lot about journalism, Wisconsin, your career. But what's next? What are you... you're certainly not just going to twiddle your thumbs. I don't think you're someone who's going to not be involved in one way or another.
Right. So I do want to stay involved in journalism in some fashion. And I think there'll be a project or two come my way. I can't talk too much about it yet. But
okay.
I don't want to work full time, but I do want to do some project work. But in the meantime, you know, I took up painting during the pandemic. And it was mostly just as a way to relax. But I really enjoyed it. So I'm taking a watercolor class with a friend of mine at MATC starting tomorrow.
Nice.
And as one of my retirement gifts from my sister-in-law was supplies. So I think that'll be fun. Some travel is in the works. I'm actually going to France for 9 days in April. And my wife Lisa and I have talked about this, and she said, you can go by yourself. So I'm actually going by myself.
Wow. Which cities are you going to go to?
I may go down to Bordeaux for a bit, but mostly Paris. And it's all about art. I'm the kind of person, when I go to an art museum, I want to stay all day. And my family likes art museums, but not all day.
Okay.
And so they're not reading every plaque like I am. And so that's what I'm going to do.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
David,
it'll be fun.
Is there any temptation? Because I think of, again, all of the institutional knowledge that you have, all of the dirty rumors that you must have collected over the years. And maybe this is just my inclination because I'm a bad person, but to write a fictional novel called, like, Madison Schmear or, you know, Madison Dirt. There's so much potential there.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, No, I'm not sure I have a novel in me, but I remember David Marinus, famous reporter, is actually from Madison, who worked at the Washington Post, has written books about Vince Lombardi, about Notre Dame, about Detroit. He was a great author. He came in to do a workshop one time at the Journal Sentinel, and someone asked him, "How come you don't write fiction?" And he says, "Because that's not my thing. I do journalism." And I kind of feel that's where I'm at, too.
Well, and it's also, as you said at the beginning of your career, that you thought maybe creative writing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it really is. I'm so impressed when people who make that jump, mm-hmm. because there's something about journalism or opinion that you at least start with the facts. And the part of the process is you have to be a good writer, but it's also the order in which you craft an argument or whatever, but there is some pieces there to start with versus a blank page on a script or a novel or a poem. And you're like, this can go anywhere. And the only person who decides where it goes is me. And like, I agree with you that I think it's much easier to play with the things that are there versus the imagination of, And no guardrails of like, this could go anywhere until an editor tells me to rein it in. I guess I'm doing dragons now.
Yeah. So I don't think I would have any trouble writing. I've never had a problem with just sitting down and writing. I've done some short fiction, but I heard Stephen King has a great book on writing. I think it's called On Writing. I can't remember the name now, but he compares writing fiction to an archaeological excavation. I always thought about, you have to outline everything and you have to know where you're going. He's like, no, you just write and you uncover the story as you go.
And the characters kind of reveal themselves to you, right?
The characters reveal themselves. I thought that was such a... He gave me such hope.
Do you have a story somewhere in the back?
I don't know. Maybe? I don't know. See, I'm also... Another project of mine is a family history of the Haynes side of the family. My great-grandfather came from Northwest Ohio. And sometime between 1870 and 1880, he moved to Indiana. And sometime during that decade, most of his family was wiped out by a plague that swept through that part of the country. They called it black measles, which was probably Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and it killed young people in particular. He had a family of nine, and only a couple of them were left. And so I'd love to get over there and research that, because I think there's something there mm-hmm. to write, particularly having just come out of a pandemic ourselves, about what happened. And I'd just like to know, for our family's sake, that's the legend. That's all we know. And so that's sort of hanging out there too.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, any parting words on journalism or Wisconsin or advice for those of us who are left here to continue to cover and talk about and hopefully improve?
Well, I think that, one, there's always going to be a place for professional fact-based journalism. It's just really important. I think people inherently know that. And I think civic leadership knows that. But two, as I look, I'm just going to focus on the Journal Sentinel because that's what I know. I've never seen a better group of young journalists than I see in that room. And I worked with Megan Toohey, who was made famous recently in She Said, the movie and the book. She was higher education reporter when I was education reporter. Megan was fantastic. But there's a large group of young people there under the age of 40 who are really good. And so that gives me a lot of hope. And I think they're beginning to figure out the business model. I think they'll figure it out. It's going to take time, but I think they'll figure it out.
All right. Well, David Haynes, thank you for so much for spending time with us today.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for us today on As Goes Wisconsin. Stick around for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Unless you're listening to WXCO in Wausau, then you got the Chad Holmes Show coming up next. But for us, we'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Come back then. But for now, this has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Yeah. childhood should be the happiest time of life. But for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org.
WFHR today. Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.